information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
I know that I've been warned, and you tried to waive my rights with your wicked witch's wand. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Media Monarchy. It's episode 226, July 22nd. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, Idiocracy Grove, and Navigating Ground Zero. Movie magic, Hagee holidays, and hallucinogenic receipts, censored cures, Murdoch pie, and phone hacking highlights, Atlantis adventures, Elanin and Stuxnet, ceilings, borders, housing, contagion, plus Mossad, Milchan, Medicis, murder, and much, much more. July 22nd, 2011, episode 226 from MediaMonarchy.com.
Got a way to think everyone around me is crazy. I've got a way to think everything that's bad gets worse. I've got a way to push it down deep inside me. I've got a way to fill it all up to the first.
Won't you stop?
Sloan, from their 2008 record Parallel Play, we heard Burn For It and Witch's Wand, both going together masterfully. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Blah, blah. My nose is still a little stopped up. I think I've accumulated allergies for the first time in my life after nearly 6 years of living in Portland, Oregon. But my trip to the west ain't a trip to the right. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, cover-ups, and so, so much, much more. This is the 226th episode, and it's July 22nd, 2011. And we're broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. We're able to squeak in before the weekend's broadcast of PDX Pop Now Festival here in Portland. And I don't think anybody's coming in after me, so we may go long. Huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net for simulcasting this show, and thanks to all the other alternative media outlets who help spread the word about Media Monarchy. Radio23.org, archive.org, radioforall.net are the main archive sources for these and all the other episodes, the mixtapes, the interviews, the B-sides, the videos. And interesting, I generally, and have been doing it for the last probably couple years, blast out a message on the Media Monarchy page on Facebook. And then that fires out to Twitter and all that. But just now, I had my suspicions confirmed when I tried to hit the message and send it out with the link to the stream to listen to the show live right now, July 22nd, 2011. Oh, message failed. Content has been flagged as abusive or spammy. Thanks, Zuckerberg, and your startup capital from NQTEL, the investment arm of the Central Intelligence Agency. It's made fun of by the Onion, but it's rooted in truth, and that's why it's so bloody funny. But we are on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy and MySpace and Twitter and YouTube and Tumblr, Gmail, Skype, all those things with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. You can hit the donate button if you find this source valuable. Does it enrich your life? That's the question to ask about so many of the media bits and bytes that we take in constantly. You've got a spam filter on your computer, but what about your noggin? If you find these sources valuable, Media Monarchy, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, any and all of them, please donate. In the new Greatest Depression, helping each other, fund each other, is going to be the key. So we want to thank, yet again, return donors Ryan in Arizona and Stephen the Beekeeper in Oklahoma. Huge thanks for their continued support to Media Monarchy. And I believe those are all our notes. When I left the house this morning, there was only one confirmed death. Now we have two. Oslo explosion kills at least two. And I first heard this from our sources in London. Steve, hat tip to her. Norway's capital shaken by bomb blast. Oslo blast shatters windows at Prime Minister's office, nearby buildings. So this story is developing, only going on as I speak to you now for just a couple of hours. Meanwhile, Obama stresses need for more tax revenue. And in New York, the heat starts early. One of the nice things here in the Pacific Northwest. Not so damn hot. But of course, we've also got Captain America and Caterpillar and John Boner and Maria Shriver and all those other top stories on Google News that we'll leave open. But seriously, this is episode 226. Let's do it. Happy to announce episode 2 of NavigatingNetflix.com has been published. It is up. It is live. It's on NavigatingNetflix.com. And I cross-posted it, put it up on MediaMonarchy.com, where if you're a subscriber, I just sent you out the audio version of episode 2 from Navigating Netflix, Idiocracy, the brilliant comedic satire. And its plot of a future humanity dumbed down to the point of near uselessness, a sardonic commentary on our health systems, military systems, prison systems, justice systems, media systems, corporate consumer culture, and more. Mike Judge takes his characters through the gauntlet of ridiculous culture gone awry in Idiocracy. This episode is just under an hour, and I'm hugely excited about it. Some of the kinks from the pilot episode have worked out and worked themselves out, and it's only going to get better. You get the video, high quality, low quality, audio only, just as we've been doing with New World Next Week, which is on hiatus as CorbettReport.com is on hiatus. So again, my friends, please spread the word about NavigatingNetflix.com. Now more than ever, you need it. And our shows will always be free. And of course, as things expand, it may not be all about Netflix. It'll be any way you can get your hands on media to watch it, and we'll discuss it and analyze it and share it. But NavigatingNetflix.com is the catchy name, especially now, that hopefully will ride the zeitgeist and bring in a lot of folks to ultimately join the TragedyAndHope.com community. Think of it as your social network with a higher purpose, if you will. So, speaking of TragedyAndHope.com, the latest episode from their PeaceRevolution.org podcast, episode 35, The House of Rothschild. that could perhaps be its own future episode of Navigating Netflix. But here it's episode 35 of Peace Revolution with a ton of documentation, a ton of notes. I was just a little bit into it, and it gets right into Jordan Maxwell. So many other things. Eustace Mullins, Jan Ervin, De Beers, the Roundtable Groups. All these things all linked up in massive documentation for you. So again, the number one higher education podcast on Podomatic, peacerevolution.org. Now, last week we mentioned when we had put up our latest interview videos and audio with Bob Tuscan, bobtuscan.com on Oracle Broadcasting. We mentioned we had also gone on the same day on Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis. At the time, I didn't have the audio. Now, my friends, I do. And again, if you're a subscriber, feeds.feedburner.com/mediamonarchy. Subscribe through your browser. Manually put it into iTunes and you won't miss a thing. PDFs, MP3s, MP4s, all the files will come to you. So you've already gotten Operation Bohemian Grove, where our good friend Clyde Lewis invited us to Ground Zero July 13th on the day that Anonymous launched Operation Bohemian Grove. And we discussed that on last week's episode 225. But we do have updates, as of course Bohemian Grove goes on till the end of July, as the world's rich males gather together in the redwoods of California to cremate their care. We're going to check out one update from Russia Today where they go hit the scene at Bohemian Grove. But I also want to mention, as long as we're hashtag navigating Netflix, I bumped to the top of my disc queue and watched it a few days ago, a film from 2002 by Harry Shearer, who you may know as Mr. Burns, the voice of, but also of Spinal Tap and so many other things. He had a movie in 2002 called Teddy Bear's Picnic, and it's about a waiter at a shishi California resort with a different name who videotapes the elites and their dirty dealings to give it to the media to expose them. The beginning of the film has a tongue-in-cheek disclaimer saying there's a real place, kind of like this. Our lawyers have really stressed us to tell you that this is not that place. Wink, wink. Operation Bohemian Grove.
It is nestled among the redwoods, 2,700 acres of pristine land, broken down into dozens of camps. And for 2 weeks every July since the 1880s, they've been filled with some of the most wealthy and powerful men in the world. Many of them arrive on their corporate jets at the nearby Sonoma County Airport. Others arrive in fancy cars, which will fill the on-site parking lot. At its height, there is said to be more than 2,000 men who attend. And as you can imagine, they are well protected by a trove of police.
This is private property.
Yeah, I know. So we're out covering the protests, and we just wanted to see if there was anyone
I would
we
like
could
you
give
guys
us...
to get off the property, please.
There's no way we
no,
could just
not
get
at
an
all.
Escort?
Not at all. And I'll have the police come and arrest you if you don't leave.
Okay.
Access is by invitation only, and most pay more than $15,000 to attend. And for more than 35 years, protesters have stood at the entrance gates.
Our concern is not what's going on inside of the grove, but what's happening outside of the grove with the people that are in here.
According to several reports, this is where the idea for the Manhattan Project was conceived back in 1942. It's also where every Republican president since the 60s has spent time before actually becoming the nominee.
We know for sure that Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan sat down and had conversation about who was going to run for president when. And they made a deal.
Peter Phillips wrote his dissertation on the Bohemian Club in 1994 and was invited to attend for 4 days. He witnessed firsthand the opening event, the cremation of care, where the power elite leave their cares behind in a symbolic ceremony beneath Moloch the owl, seen in this photo. Jed Jenkel says he was a paid employee of the Grove and drove the horse and buggy that carried the casket in the ceremony.
The casket represented their cares, and they would actually burn it in along the lake with music.
This is a place filled with secrets that only those who go inside and perhaps the trees will ever really know. But I was able to get my hands on some photographs that I want to show you just to give you a sense on what it looks like on the inside. This is a photograph of people who attend. As we mentioned, it is all men, and this is a photograph of some of them. This here was taken back in 1999. Colin Powell, the back of Donald Rumsfeld's head. And this is Thomas Keene. 2 years later, he would become head of the 9/11 Commission. Here's a picture. Newt Gingrich, Henry Kissinger, Henry Kissinger's son, and another shot of Thomas Keene.
Here's a much younger Dick Cheney at the Grove, and Henry Kissinger having a little fun. I was also able to get my hands on several programs from previous years, outlining the schedule of talks and their topics.
Now, what we have here on July 22nd, 2008, is the Lakeside Talk bit given by CFR member and Trilateral Commission member Fred Starr. He gave a talk called Afghanistan, the Unexpected Upside.
There are other connections to be made as well between the Lakeside Talks and public policies that follow.
This was a man that was involved in the oil business, George Lenkowitz, the Persian Gulf Crisis. This is 1980. Caspar Weinberger, who was the Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration on rearming America. And that's easily documented. The arms buildup came in around late 81, 82.
There are rumors of extreme drunkenness, of prostitutes, and of homosexual activities by members. But for the most part, it is the secret backroom agreements, critics say, should be brought to light.
That agreement can be, you know, occupying the Middle East, fighting terrorism, encircling China politically and militarily.
For Mary Moore, who's been researching Bohemian Grove for more than three decades, what happens inside is symptomatic of a much larger problem.
We've all grown up picking civics, trying to understand how the world works, and we're all told that we elect representatives, they go to Washington, we have total influence over them, and they make decisions that are in the best interests of us. Then we start growing up, and if we pay any kind of attention, we find out that none of that is true.
In Monterey, California, Christine Frizzell, RT.
We also have all the latest from Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. Of course, that preceding Bohemian Grove clip embedded in my update of the audio of my recent appearance on Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis on KXL 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon. Fallen Angel, Solar Serpent, and Kilowatt Wolves. All the latest articles and episodes. You can listen live or subscribe. Read the articles. Last Monday was the Wolves of Executive Dictatorship. Then the Fallen Angel case, Kecksburg 2011, Ready, Aim, Kilowatt, and the Rise of the Solar Serpent. So, yet again, amazing work from all the fantastic hosts I'm, as I say so many times, humbled and lucky to be associated with in some way. So we didn't have NewWorldNextWeek.com this week or the next or for several weeks. James Corbett is on hiatus, but he went out with a blast and put up a ton of media over the last few days, and I have it all posted up on episode 195 from Corbett Report. Five documentaries that will blow your mind. From conspiracy to manipulation, science to scandal, the Corbett Report presents excerpts from five documentaries that will give you pause for thought, to say the very least. And those documentaries gone over are The Lightbulb Conspiracy, Star Suckers, The Age of Transitions, A is for Adam, Truth, Lies, and the Legend of 9/11. I think that's right. They're all there in the documentation, and you can get some of them on the fantastic topdocumentaryfilms.com. And then all the other related videos on youtube.com/Corver Report. Last Sunday's Sunday update, Independence Day, foreign intervention behind the creation of the new South Sudan. How to subscribe to the Corber Report, as I believe iTunes has been jerking around his feed for quite some time now. The truth about the Arab Spring. Whistleblower dead, the latest on the Murdoch scandal. The Murdoch Empire, how media shapes society, and Towards the Heart of the Onion, appearing on Russia Today, on The Alex Jones Show, with folks like Tony Gosling and others. And interviews recently with Keith Harmon Snow, Christina Bjorgeson, Russ Baker of Family of Secrets. Excellent interview, excellent video. And the one and only Peter Dale Scott. And finally, posted just a few hours ago, the official announcement on his YouTube channel of summer hiatus. So huge hat tip to James Corbett and CorbettReport.com. There's not much more I can say about it. Let's move now, my friends, to the sister sites in the media monarchy kingdom. And we'll begin with HolyHexes.com. With July 21st, pop culture news purge, movie magic, Hagee holidays, and Jesus receipts. And the story that we grab from ibtimes.com sounds just like an Onion headline, and we link up both for you. Harry Potter books spark rise in Satanism among children. Or, does Harry Potter promote witchcraft and Satanism? One of those is The Onion. One of them is ibtimes.com. And we also have charismamag.com. Harry Potter film spawns demonic teen trends. These are if you let your stupid kid do whatever they want and don't pay attention to anything they're involved in. The Holy Wood, or the Holly Branch, or the Wicked Witch's Wand, call it what you want, the movie magic can be there. Rock, Witchcraft, and Ancient Woods. The band DC Fontana on filming their controversial occult-like video. More on that from thisistamworth.co.uk. And our friends at the National Geographic Explore Wicca.
Today, in England, witchcraft and its more modern incarnation, Wicca, are pagan religions. Wiccans worship the gods and spirits of nature. In return for their faith, the spirits grant them the power of magic. It was this power that first drew Gaylee's Cod to Wicca. Now, she's studying to become a full-fledged witch.
I like the name witch, and I suppose in a way I'd like to reclaim it as being a good word and standing for all the things that I believe in.
She has her husband's complete support, though he has no interest in witchcraft himself. She knows others will not be so accepting.
I'm very careful about who I tell. I'm very careful about he sees my pentacle. There it is. That sits by me, and I have a great belief that it should be next to my body as opposed to on show. So there's a lot of prejudice still.
Once a month, Gaylee meets with her coven, a group of like-minded witches who bolster one another in their faith. They call themselves the Raven and the Rose. When witches gather in a circle, they believe they can weave stronger magic.
It's a procreation festival.
Tonight will be Gaylee's first time participating in a secret ritual.
Red sandalwood for passion.
It's April 30th. Tomorrow, witches all over England celebrate what they call the first day of summer, Beltane. As High Priestess of the Raven and the Rose, Jeanette Ellis will lead her coven's Beltane ritual.
Cooking up an incense for Beltane. Making an incense is a spell. The different ingredients that go into it, like making a cake, You blend them all together, and they all have specific jobs within the cake, or the incense in this case, and we'll burn that tonight.
On Beltane, the coven will thank the gods for the earth's renewed fertility. For witches, only Halloween, All Hallows' Eve, is more sacred.
We take the energy of the goddess and god, of earth and air and fire and water, the energies of the universe I place within.
Weave your web of dark and light, earth, air, fire and water, bind us all as one.
Let nothing impure enter herein.
Let no one be present unless they come with an open heart.
Their ritual shows appreciation for the return of summer and renewal. Homage paid, the witches can ask for their gifts from the gods.
Wisdom!
Luck!
Then, as with holy day celebrations everywhere, it's time for the party to begin. For most in England, Beltane is known as May Day, an ancient feast still celebrated widely. Despite the fears their faith still sparks, witches figure in May Day festivals across England. The Raven and the Rose coven seizes the opportunity to march proudly through the streets. Their public walk shows that prejudice is beginning to wane, and reminds onlookers that the celebration of the earth, the sky, and the seasons is humankind's oldest faith.
And we all play parts in the cake. Thousands take part in annual Haitian voodoo ritual. That's from KWTX.com. 4,500 couples participate in Indonesian interfaith marriage ceremony. That's from the Belief blog on CNN. And GodDiscussion.com gets into Hagies, Christians United for Israel meeting in Washington, D.C.
Everyone with eyes to see and ears to hear readily recognizes that Israel is in grave crisis. Their enemies are surrounding them, and this is the time for the state of Israel to hear from their friends and supporters from around the world. That's why Christians United for Israel is going this week to Washington, D.C. to have our annual summit. More than 5,000 people are coming from every state in the Union to stand up and speak up for the state of Israel. For those of you who cannot attend personally, you can watch it live on television. You can watch it by going to Daystar Television and seeing it coast to coast, real time, at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday night. The special speakers will be myself, Dennis Prager, one of the premier radio hosts in the nation, congressmen, senators. We're going to have some of the most fabulous music that you've ever heard. 2.5 hours of something that will bless you, inform you, and entertain you. I want you to tell your friends, I want you to tell your fellow church members that Tuesday night, July the 19th, at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time, you can watch A Night to Honor Israel coming live from Washington, D.C. Or you can watch it over the Internet at www.cufi.org. You simply click the icon on that screen and you'll be going straight to Washington, D.C. to watch us over the Internet. Two ways to see us. Daystar Television, 7:30 Eastern Standard Time, live, or watch it over the Internet by going to www.cufi.org. Click the icon, and you're with us in Washington. I look forward to seeing you Tuesday night, live, in Washington, D.C.
That could have almost doubled as a promo for this show. But the hits just keep on coming. If we took a holiday, Madonna plans Israel vacay. That's from YNetNews.com. New York Times reports Michelle Bachmann is now a Baptist. But according to Fox News host Mitt Romney, Mormon Mitt is not a Christian. Meanwhile, the Pope accepts resignation of Philly Archbishop amid another sex scandal. Hush money, murder, and more. The famed Chateau LC bought by Scientology. More on that from HollywoodReporter.com. Magic Mansions, movie magic. Scientology, meanwhile, not happy with the book that we covered recently, Inside Scientology. More on that from the Village Voice and a creepy stalking video from them as well. This is one, there's a couple where you have to check what year it is, and it seems so hard to tell anymore as time either speeds up or wraps around or is repeating in a shorter and shorter feedback loop. Westboro Baptist Church protest the rock group Kiss in Springfield, Illinois. And we close off the Holy Hexes 721 Pop Culture News Purge Movie Magic Hagee Holidays with a South Carolina couple that sees Jesus on a Walmart receipt. Our other post on HolyHexes.com brings us back to the People's Republic of Oregon, and we take it again from GodDiscussion.com. Oregon church uses hallucinogenic drug for religious ceremonies. Federal court to hear appeal on the case. A federal high court has agreed to hear the appeal on the case of an Oregon church known as the Holy Light of the Queen, which uses a hallucinogenic substance called ayahuasca, which it brews for its members to drink in religious services. The leader of the church, Jonathan Goldman, arrested in 1999 by the police after a consignment of the tea from Brazil was intercepted by U.S. Customs. In 2009, after members of Jonathan Goldman's Holy Light of the Queen sued on the grounds that the arrest of their leader, Jonathan Goldman, was in violation of their religious rights, U.S. District Judge Owen Panner delivered judgment that the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act guaranteed the right of the church and its members to use the hallucinogenic brew in their religious ceremonies. The church had argued to the judge's satisfaction that the brew was not harmful and was not being used outside religious ceremonies of the church. The decision to hear an appeal on the case follows from a challenge to Judge Owen Panner's judgment in February this year by Barry Satoro's close friend, Attorney General Eric Holder, who filed a brief with the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on the grounds that the church had not made any distinction in its case between their freedom to use the drug and their freedom from having the government regulate use of the drug. Holder emphasized the fact that the hallucinogenic drug used in the tea was a highly restricted drug in the U.S., as are many, many things that are natural and grow from the earth that was made by whatever creator god you believe in. And as we went through all the list of gatherings and rituals and ceremonies all across the globe, we've all got our part to play in the cake, as the Wiccans said. Natural remedies have been around for quite some time, and ultimately, growing up in the church, and I think we probably said this here, I've many, many, many years later reached the point where I probably think that dudes back in the day did something like ayahuasca and stared up in the sky, and they made up some stories, and that's what we're doing today. Let's shift gears, my friends, to foodworldorder.com for the July 21st binge and purge, famine, drought, and censored cures. Coming in 2012, genetically modified front lawns and the mass spraying of neighborhoods and playgrounds with Roundup. Thanks to a recent admission by the USDA that it does not have the regulatory framework to even regulate GMOs, the world of biotech is set to unleash a tidal wave of GM seeds upon the U.S. This is the upshot of the Scotts Miracle-Gro challenge the USDA over its GMO grass seeds, to which the USDA threw in the towel and essentially announced it can't technically regulate many GMOs at all. Welcome to the new world order of GMO self-regulation. More on that story from naturalnews.com. And if that was coming in 2012, we are stewing in the drought of 2011. In the southern United States, desperate for rain as the middle part of the country continues to get scorched. That story from the economiccollapseblog.com. And again, if we glance back at the news, I'm sure we'll see something about the heat. But let's not. Guardian reporting the United Nations declares two areas of Somalia to be in famine and urges action. Will it be the blue helmets or the green helmets? Grist.org asking the important question, why is Michelle Obama's food initiative promoting Walmart? Now that we can see on the breaking news 58 minutes ago from Fast Company, Walmart's big plan to feed the food deserts of the U.S. Nestle boosts its distribution of disease-resistant cocoa trees. That's from confectionerynews.com. Seattle takes a risk-based approach to food trucks. That's from Food Safety News, as is Starbucks Bistro Box Chicken recalled. And our hat trick of Washington news from foodsafetynews.com, bird poop found in Washington lentils. The final note on this binge and purge returns to naturalnews.com with a story that, as you may know, as I collect all the news feeds and throw them into the bookmark folders and prep them to be posted to the sites in some kind of coherent fashion, I had the story in my bookmarks, and then I had a conversation with a guy at work who first, when I said, do you ever look at naturalnews.com, said, oh, I don't. I basically stuttered, he doesn't use the stupid internet. But thanks to the stupid internet, I knew what this guy was ranting and raving about as he angrily marched through the store. Gerson tapes were nearly lost, but now reveal censored cancer cures that have saved thousands of lives. Have you heard about the Gerson tapes? They're a collection of interviews and teachings from Charlotte Gerson, G-E-R-S-O-N, who runs the Gerson clinics that have successfully treated thousands of cancer patients with a therapy based on cleansing, detoxification, and live foods nutrition. The treatment's so successful that, even today, thousands of patients from around the world flock to the Gerson clinics in Mexico to heal themselves of cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and other chronic degenerative conditions. Why are the clinics in Mexico? Because, not surprisingly, U.S. authorities have outlawed all natural cancer treatments in America and even viciously attacked the top scientists who discovered scientifically valid cancer cures that really work. Some proof? The shocking documentary, Berzinski. That documentary is available to watch on naturalnews.tv. And don't confuse that name with Zbigniew Brzezinski. This is Brzezinski, B-U-R-Z-Y-N-S-K-I. Brzezinski and the Gerson tapes. Censored cancer cures. And you may recall we recently went over the story of the dad who secretly gave his son cannabis treatments to great curing effect. Our other story on foodworldorder.com takes the slogan from a promo shirt that I got at the grocery store that I work for from, I believe, an Oregon-based pet food company. But we'll take it from the LA Times, as I've never worn that shirt and I don't really like dogs, and I'll be damned if they're going to eat better than me. My dog eats better than I do. Pets join in on the organic food trend. When Gabriel, a 10-year-old rescue cat from Chinatown, tucks into his morning meal, you won't see any Friskies or Meow Mix in his bowl. Ahi tuna and duck are more on the ticket. I think there's more than enough pesticides and chemicals and that kind of stuff in human food, says Gabriel's owner, Jason Lanham, on a recent expedition to the Urban Pet, a Los Angeles specialty pet store. I eat natural food, and I don't see any reason why I shouldn't give it to my cat. These days, our pets may be eating better than we are. Big box pet stores and precious pet boutique shelves are increasingly stocked with gourmet edibles that are corn-free, wheat-free, locally sourced, byproduct-free, free-range, minimally processed, and raw. Many come with homey, inviting labels, and some look palatable even for humans. At Petco, a number of locations now have a wood-floored store within a store for natural foods. And if you think your pet's diet is still lacking, you can bolster it with supplements containing brewer's yeast, alfalfa, blueberries, and more that promise shiny coats, bright eyes, and limber joints. As more of us turn toward more healthful food, we're doing the same for our pets, and the market has caught on. If there's a trend in human food and supplements, you'll see it on the pet food aisle, says Bob Vetter, president of American Pet Products Association based in Greenwich, Connecticut. Gluten-free, vitamin-supplemented, breed-specific senior formulas, all of these have taken over the pet marketplace, and we're seeing the competition increasing. But that should ask you about your own shiny coat. And I love the wood-floored store within a store. Our local Safeway did that on the natural aisle, and it's just, it's one of those great kind of simple metaphors for things. Well, I'll put this fake-looking wooden thing up, and I'll put natural or organics or some kind of fakery to cash in on what is now being spun as a trend. Just as everything seems to happen in this voracious killer American culture, something that does start off as real and pure, whether that's a music scene, an art scene, film, whatever. Sometimes it's food. Always with the elites and their interlocking, interbred, eugenics-obsessed corporatism, they'll find a way to co-opt it and sell it back to us. We now move to cyberspacewar.com, one of the numerous sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, and we begin, as we did with the other sites, with the July 21st DEFCON news purge. Scandals, murder, arrests, and all the phone hacking updates you can handle, hashtag phone hacking, and thanks to allgov.com. They put together the scorecard. You can't tell the scandal without a scorecard. And this is from Thursday, July 21st. The collateral damage from the phone hacking scandal in the United Kingdom that is enveloping Rupert Murdoch's News Corp keeps piling up. Here's a sampling of the numerical highlights produced so far. 4,000 estimated number of phone hacking victims. $161,130 amount of money allegedly paid in bribes to Scotland Yard officers by News of the World employees. 16. Percentage chance that Rupert Murdoch steps down as News Corp CEO by the end of the year. 11. Number of people arrested so far. 10, if you don't count Glenn Mulcair, the private investigator disavowed by Murdoch at Tuesday's hearings before Parliament, who was sentenced to 6 months in jail in 07 for hacking into Royal's office voicemail. 10. The number of people on Scotland Yard's press team who used to work for News International out of 45. 7. The number of people who have resigned over the scandal, including 4 top News International executives and 2 Scotland Yard officers. 5.5. The percentage rise in News Corp stock price on Tuesday, the day Murdoch and son James testified before Parliament. That's still 12.4% below its 30-day high. 1. Number of Murdoch sons who have admitted to misleading Parliament. 1. Number of News of the World whistleblowers found dead. Sean Hoare, the first journalist who talked, found dead in his home Monday. Sean Hoare, S-E-A-N-H-O-A-R-E. James Corbett gets into this on one of those videos that we mentioned for you that's on YouTube.com/Corbett Report. Whistleblower dead, the latest on the Murdoch scandal. And our last note on the scorecard, 0. The number of on-air Fox News personalities who have expressed outrage over News Corp corporate behavior in the hacking scandal. Hashtag phone hacking updates. You can't tell the scandal without a scorecard. We'll throw in a couple more. From Voice of America, London police chief quits over phone hacking scandal. Sean Hoare dead. News of the World phone hacking whistleblower feared for his life. Murdoch eavesdropping operation is amateurish compared to what the US, UK, NSA, Mossad, and the others do. fantastic piece on blacklistednews.com, and at that vaunted, previously mentioned Tuesday appearance before the Parliament, Rupert Murdoch hit with a custard pie, and it sounded a little something like this. I like that. Meanwhile, Lulzsec, who... Pardon me, friends. Cough, drop. Lulzsec, who allegedly retired, but that's what perhaps online tricksters do. Lulzsec defaces Murdoch paper with Mogul's fake death notice. More on that from Threat Level. And the one and only Roseanne Barr, who sometimes comes out as a friend of 9/11 truth, but then also espouses eugenical ideas like putting sterilization drugs into the water as if they're not already in there, acting on us anyway. She appeared on some TV gab show and noted that Murdoch tapped her phones and he's going down.
Do you think you're saner now after going through those marriages? Like, do you think you were a little bit off when you were married to those guys? Maybe because of them or regardless, but you feel a lot saner now?
Well, you know, when I first got famous, I just kind of lost my mind. You know, like Charlie Sheen, the whole thing. But, yeah, I'm way saner now. Now that I got the medicinal marijuana, I'm safe. To say, Chelsea, I'm so happy to see Rupert Murdoch's stuff crumbling, because when he came to our country and, like, I was one of his first targets, and he tapped my phones and people went through my garbage and all that kind of stuff does kind of drive you crazy. And now here I am sitting here and that guy's going down.
Meanwhile, in the cyberspace war, feds arrest 14 anonymous suspects over PayPal attack, and they raid dozens more. Meanwhile, Anonymous to build its own social network called Anon Plus. Feds indict hacktivists for stealing public domain data from MIT. He just had a better, more efficient way of doing it. The other way you can put this, because that one was from InfoWars, from the Register, Reddit co-founder charged with massive data theft. That would be the hacktivist stealing public domain data. A really interesting piece from FalkVenge.net. This is data retention. Would you give it to any future government? One if by land, two if by sea, and three if by cyberspace. War has been declared. We've reported it for you over the last few weeks and prepped you for it over the last couple of years. Judge grants Google Street View wiretap appeal. And another one on the loss of your memory. I believe last week the headline was, "Is Google making you stupid?" But again, from allgov.com, losing your memory, stop Googling, turn off your GPS, and stop watching violence on TV. But Forbes is reporting it's full speed ahead for facial recognition technology, biometrics, from face.com. And our last note from cryptogon.com that sources to Engadget on Apple's new OS X Lion, in the quote, "Apple borrows so heavily from iOS, the operating system that's on more handheld devices, the iPhone and the iPad. Apple borrows so heavily from iOS that at times cycling through features makes the whole thing feel like you're merely operating an iPad with a keyboard attached." Cryptogon notes, essentially, it's going to become the vending machine. So those are the scandals, the murders, and the arrests, and all those other things piling up by the moment surrounding the phone hacking story that I believe you may have heard about it first from NewWorldNextWeek.com 2.5 weeks ago. Furthermore, on cyberspacewar.com, the space shuttle Atlantis touches down, ending an era of adventure in space.
This is an NBC News special report. Here is Natalie Morales. Good morning and welcome to this NBC News special report. I'm Natalie Morales. The space shuttle Atlantis is hurtling toward Earth right now, set to land within just minutes, about 4 minutes away from that. It is the end of an era, the final spaceflight for the shuttle program after 30 years of ferrying astronauts and supplies to and from space. It's, of course, a bittersweet moment for the people who work at NASA, about 8,000 of them. They're, of course, tremendous pride in what they've accomplished over the past 3 decades, and also sadness over seeing the shuttle program come to a close. And it raises a lot of big questions about the future of manned spaceflight in this country. Let's go to NBC's Tom Costello, who's at the Kennedy Space Center for us this morning, watching it as it's happening right now. And Tom, what is going on there right now?
Well, they have got runway 15 prepared. They're expecting the touchdown at approximately 5:56 a.m. Eastern time here. The shuttle coming from the northwest. It's already passed over the Kennedy Space Center and is now about to do a giant loop to come back to the Kennedy Space Center. This is the 135th flight for the shuttle program, and Atlantis is, of course, the second youngest shuttle in the entire fleet. By the time it rolls to a stop here in just a few more minutes, Natalie, the shuttle program, you may have just now heard, those explosions, those are the supersonic blasts that occur when it comes by. The shuttle comes by, but everything is on track for a good landing. As I was saying, by the time it rolls to a stop, the shuttle program will have put on 541 million miles and circled the Earth some 21,000 times, making 37 trips to the International Space Station. This was a 13-day mission carrying some 8,000 pounds of supplies to the International Space Station, and that's it. That's the last supply mission the shuttle will ever make to the space station, and there you're looking at a live picture of the shuttle coming in for a landing. Runway 15 again here at Kennedy Space Center.
And picture perfect conditions, weather conditions, as I understand, for that landing there today. Tom, and I know you spoke with the four astronauts yesterday, Commander Chris Ferguson, Doug Curley, the pilot, Sandra Magnus, a mission specialist, and Rex Wall, I'm another mission specialist. What do they tell you about what they might be feeling in this moment?
Well, they have all said very candidly that this is a very bittersweet mission for them because it is the last one, and because they're so aware of the contributions of all the astronauts and the ground crews over the last 30 years and what the shuttle program has meant for America. But also a great honor that they're the ones who get to close out the program. They're the last ones to close the hatch from the International Space Station and back away. The last ones to make that re-entry now at one point this morning going 14 times the speed of sound as they make re-entry.
And Tom, I know there's a motto in mission control that there's no crying in mission control. Do you think that's going to be put to the test a little bit today, knowing this is the last one, the last landing of the shuttle program?
Oh, I suspect so, Natalie. You know, I can tell you that here at the Kennedy Space Center, the visitors' galleries have been packed at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. Very unusual for so early in the morning. They are packed there as well. And there has been a great deal of talk here that this is emotional for people who have spent their entire careers working on this program. We've talked to many, many, many people here at the Kennedy Space Center who will be losing their jobs because the program is coming to an end. Now, as we watch... I'm listening to Mission Control. We're watching NASA. We're watching NASA TV, as you are as well, as Atlantis makes that final approach now. One point, we've said it every mission up until now, Natalie, but it bears repeating.
Right.
The space shuttle is not a plane. There is no go-around capability. You have one chance to get it right.
Again,
it's a glider.
Pilot point
and
of
so
view,
they,
right. 1 minute till touchdown.
So let's listen in now as we are expecting a touchdown here very shortly. You're seeing it as we are seeing it all live. Space Shuttle Atlantis making its final descent. And the final descent for the shuttle program.
And Chris Ferguson is the commander. He's got the con, as it were. He's in charge. That's his view coming out of his cockpit looking at the runway.
That's a fascinating point of view. You see that runway 15? And now we're looking at it live. Approaching there.
The pre-flare maneuver executed. Landing gear down and locked. Main gear touchdown. Hurley now deploying the drag chute. Ferguson rotating the nose gear down to the deck. Nose gear touchdown. Having fired the imagination of a generation, a ship like no other, its place in history secured, the space shuttle pulls into port for the last time. Its voyage at an end.
Tom, I don't know if you heard that little crackle, it seems like, in Doug Hurley's voice there with that landing. Certainly, I know in Mission Control, there's probably a lot of applause going on right now.
Mission complete, Houston.
I think.
After serving the world for over 30 years, the space shuttle turned its place in history and has come to a final stop.
We copy your will stop, and we'll take this opportunity to congratulate you, Atlantis, as well as the thousands of passionate individuals across this great spacefaring nation who truly empowered this incredible spacecraft, which for three decades has inspired millions around the globe. Job well done, America.
Hey, thanks, Butch. Great words. Great words. You know, the space shuttle's changed the way we view the world.
Tom Costello, I want to thank you for your special coverage with us. This has been an NBC News special report, a picture-perfect landing of the space shuttle Atlantis. And, of course, we're going to have much more on the shuttle landing this morning on Today. I'm Madeline Morales in New York.
There you have it, our Columbian endeavor. Or rather, our Columbian enterprise to endeavor for the discovery of Atlantis, where all challengers will be destroyed, ending an era of adventure in space. We do have our related updates from NASAWatch.com. Rejoice, comrades! The glorious era of Soyuz begins, as does the race to the moon, heating up for private firms, reports the New York Times. Meanwhile, Computer World reports NASA says robots are the key to future space exploration. No stranger to spaceships, New Mexico builds a spaceport. That's from NPR, and I believe there is audio to go along with that. One small step for man, one giant leap for corporations. Another fantastic piece from allgov.com. And the fabric from the flag taken to the moon is sold for a mere $45,000. Flags soared to the moon, but the bids didn't. Meanwhile, speaking of moons, a fourth moon around Pluto has been discovered. More on that from Digital Journal. And our last related update, we grab from the intelhub.com that sources back to some local reports. Cape Doctor says he's not leading survivalist group and has been harassed by believers in Planet X. That sets the stage for all our other updates on cyberspacewar.com. And as always, a huge thanks to my man Alan in Omaha, one of our lead writers and editors on cyberspacewar.com, and we'll always note, if you've got an area you've got a passion for and know your way around a blogger or a tweet feed, send me an email, mediamonarchy@gmail.com, and you can help put more media out from the monarchy. Astronomers should be glad to see the intense interest in space. David Morrison, an astronomer at the NASA Ames Research Center, compensates for those with little in their skeptical toolkit by lambasting the Nibiru Earth collision hysteria on the net. Morrison estimates that there are 2 million websites discussing the impending Nibiru Earth collision. He receives, on average, 5 email inquiries about Nibiru every day. At least once a week, I get a message from a young person as young as 11 who says they are ill and or contemplating suicide because of the coming doomsday. Morrison told Life's Little Mysteries, a sister site to space.com, what you just heard. Meanwhile, my man, Alan, in Omaha, did a quick search to see how many hits came up for Nibiru Earth collision, and there were approximately 703,000 hits, according to Google's search engine, not the 2 million claimed by Morrison. But this goes on into Planet X and Nibiru and all of those other related things that, again, are difficult, I think, for me to get into within just the short span of these live shows. Like so many other areas that we go over, there are many, many, many worthy paths of more research. And what we do in the kingdom is try and lay out some kind of coherent path with the text and the subtext and the context for you to go do more research. So as long as we're talking Nibiru, and that's N-I-B-I-R-U, South Pole time-lapse video reveals Nibiru trailing the sun. Strange anomalies and more from Freedomizer Radio. But We also have a few posts related to comets and coherent catastrophism. Hype or history? As Comet Elenin arrives October 28, 2011. It's also interesting to tie in the Great Comet of 1811 and the parallels between the two. And I believe we first started to mention Elenin on this show several months ago as it related to work folks had been doing online and on YouTube about the correlation between Elenin positions and massive weather events on Earth. So, UniverseToday.com has the Elenin fact for the worried. Is 2012 doomsday to occur instead on October 28, 2011? Universe Today presents astroblogger Ian Musgrave's frequently asked questions fact sheet about Comet Elenin to dismiss nonsense and quell concerns. Musgrave points out that we've been closer to other comets with no ill effects. Elenin's tidal force will be 1/1,000,000,000th of the moon's effect on the Earth. Musgrave does a good job to marshal facts, dismissing hysteria of doom and gloom brigades. Musgrave also uses SkyMap.org to argue alignments were nowhere near the times of the Chilean earthquake or the tsunami that hit Japan. See, and I just referenced that. The article also points out we've been through bigger and denser comet tails before with no effect whatsoever. The Great Comet of 1861 is used for comparison. For a while, the Earth was actually within the comet's tail, and the inhabitants of this planet had a brief but giddy view of streams of cometary material converging towards the distant nucleus. By day, also, the sun was dimmed as the Earth plowed through the comet's gas and dust. More on the Elenin fact for the worried from Universe Today. We look back at retro futures with Paleo Future magazine. We also have the Phoenix Haboob lights, H-A-B-O-O-B. So many times we note that memes and things present themselves early on in the production and the pre-production of the show, and then other times we discover things as we're reading it into the record and doing it live for you here. There was the Wiener meme that we've had recently, whether that was Wienergate or the San Francisco circumcision ban story, or the woman last week who did the Bop It. But perhaps this week it's a boob meme. But I digress. The Haboob video posted on the CNN website created a stir when lights were spotted. Is it another Phoenix Lights sighting in the making? Jason McClellan at OpenMinds.tv gets into explaining that the lights were probably a helicopter. Finally, on CyberspaceWar.com, a new view of Stuxnet's role in the Fukushima disaster. Did Dimona Dozen murder Fukushima 50? That article from Jim Stone is on gemstonefreelance.com/fukushima.htm. We have discussed this before, the relation of the U.S. and Israeli-created Stuxnet virus, ostensibly meant to attack Iran's alleged nuclear weapons plants, and the research and the speculation has gone to other nuclear catastrophes that seem to all be raging around the globe, that all seem to be stirring, all seem to be coming from the wake of last year and the hack attacks, Google and China, and all of those things that have kicked off just over these last several months. The mass animal die-offs, the deaths of whistleblowers connected to all these events. And then 3/11 and the nuclear catastrophes rage all around the world now here into the States, as we've discussed. Los Alamos, Fort Cooper, and we'll add another one to the mix in just a little bit. So all that and so much more is available on cyberspacewar.com, my friends, and we now return for the remainder of the episode to the flagship site, mediamonarchy.com, and I suppose before we do that, I should take just a moment to remind you that you're listening to episode 226. It's July 22nd, 2011, and my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, and we are broadcasting live, as always, in the People's Republic of Oregon on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and a huge thanks to the simulcast, amazing work of ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net. And we now return you to your deprogramming. Court okays naked body scanners, rejects constitutional challenge. This from Threat Level. A federal appeals court last Friday, July 15th, unanimously declined to block the government from using intrusive body scanners across airports nationwide, saying it is, quote, not persuaded by any of the statutory or constitutional arguments against them. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Criminals Circuit was deciding a constitutional and procedural challenge to the advanced imaging technology, naked body scanners, which began rolling out in 2007 and are deployed at least 78 airports nationwide. The Electronic Privacy Information Center, EPIC.org, asked the court to block the usage of the devices, of which 500 more are to be rolled out this year. EPIC asked to block them on grounds that they are an unconstitutional privacy invasion, ineffective, and unhealthy to airline passengers. The petitioners argue that using AIT for primary screening violates the Fourth Amendment because it is more invasive than is necessary to detect weapons or explosives, the appeals court noted. As other circuits have held and as the Supreme Court has strongly suggested, screening passengers at an airport is an administrative search because the primary goal is not to determine whether any passenger has committed a crime, but rather to protect the public from a terrorist attack. The court said that whether an administrative search is reasonable, it is a balancing test on how much it intrudes upon an individual's privacy and how much that intrusion is needed for the promotion of legitimate government interests. That balance clearly favors the government here, the court ruled 3-0. The court added that an AIT scanner, unlike a magnetometer, is capable of detecting and therefore deterring attempts to carry aboard explosives in liquid powder form. And we include an editorial. The three-judge appellate panel did not address limited research suggesting that the machines might not detect explosives or even guns taped to a person's body, which they do not do effectively. And as I brace myself to go through the TSA gauntlet in a month, we're going to hope that we can wind our way around any of the naked body scanners. And of all the stories that we've heard in the build-up from TSA rage over the last year plus, here's a story that is only surprising in that it hasn't happened sooner or more often. Woman arrested for squeezing TSA officer's breast, and we can take that one from Raw Story and Raw Replay, where the woman who groped TSA officer won't face felony charges for a little tit for tat.
New at 6, we hear a lot of complaints about security screenings, gropings, and those airline passengers in security lines. The kind of Colorado woman accused of putting her hands on a TSA agent at Sky Harbor Airport. There's kind of a reversal there. Court records show Yukuri Mimame grabbed the left breast of a female agent yesterday at Terminal 4. Police say she squeezed the breast and twisted it with both hands. Now she's facing a felony count of abuse. No word on why she did what she did.
Now the Longmont woman is gaining national attention after being accused of groping a TSA agent. Yukuri Mimame was arrested at the Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix after she allegedly grabbed the breast of a female TSA agent. Mimame spent a night in jail in Arizona. She came home to Colorado today. That's where CBS 4's Howard Nathan met her. And Howard, is she denying the charges?
Well, Tom, we had a chance meeting in her parking lot by her house, but Yukuri Mimame is following the advice of her attorney. She is not talking, but the folks on Facebook, they are talking. Look at this. They set up the Acquit Yukuri Mimame page. Down here it says, this 61-year-old woman does to a TSA agent what they do to us. And then on the other side, we have people saying, are all you backers insane? This woman attacked a federal employee. You know the drill. Get in line. Take off your belt. Take off your shoes. And even then, you might be rubbed the wrong way by a TSA agent. Still, most accept it.
We have to play along for our security and our safety in the United States.
But apparently not her, according to Phoenix police. 61-year-old Yukari Miyame of Longmont is accused of grabbing the left breast of a female TSA agent on Thursday.
Some people perhaps might do some things during an argument that they normally would not do and react a certain way. I don't know if she thought it would be as serious.
TSA staff say Miyame refused passenger screening, became argumentative, and then used both hands to squeeze and twist the agent's breasts. She's now facing a felony charge of sexual assault.
Calling it a felony is pretty silly. And TSA abuses people daily.
Drew Westfall was intrigued by the Acquit Yukari Miyame campaign on Facebook. That's where Miyame is being compared to civil rights fighter Rosa Parks, standing up to authority.
They're sort of jerks about it, and like we have no recourse. Like, I don't know, I like to see them embarrassed.
But does frustration over security lines mean Miyame deserves praise?
I don't think you should be able to put your hands on anybody, especially someone who's trying to perform security.
Would you pay for her legal defense fund?
I would donate $15 to defend her. Yeah, fight the power.
The Department of Homeland Security taking this very seriously, and they're saying they will not tolerate assaults against its workforce. Miyame is a frequent flyer. The New York Post was able to get a hold of her on the phone, and she told them that she is a frequent flyer, that she goes through this every week, and every week there is a problem. Tom, we'll send it right back to you.
Sure, we got the last one of the story. All right, thank you, Howard.
And the updates keep coming. TSA announces privacy overhaul of naked body scanners. The Transportation Security Administration announced this past Wednesday that one type of body scanner deployed in as many as 78 airports nationwide will be revamped to no longer display an image of travelers' naked bodies, bowing to months of criticism over the privacy implications of the technology. The announcement came despite a federal appeals court decision last week upholding the government's right to use the technology, as we just reported for you. And on down the list of related police state updates, Big Sister spy story goes viral from the InfoWars team. DHS video characterizes white Americans as most likely terrorists. It's a Paul Joseph Watson story, and it's all linked up for you. Meanwhile, the Washington Times reporting that Thomas Drake, that former NSA official, says mismanagement continues at the spy agency. And the story that weaves its way through all our categories, regardless of site or subject, seemingly. Hashtag phone hacking. Botched Demenzies operation officer, now counterterrorism head. Remember the murder of Demenzies in the UK? The people who help cover up on the Cover Up Investigation Commission, they get promoted. Department of Homeland Security spreads more terrorism-related conspiracy theories from the one and only Lee Rogers, posted on roguegovernment.com and blacklistednews.com. Mexican prison break is one event the media can't ignore, but unfortunately they have. 60 tied to the Los Zetas escape prison in Nuevo Laredo, and there's an related piece from pro8news.com going back to the end of June that says Nuevo Laredo is under martial law. From the Deutsche Press Agency, Arizona border fence to be built with private money. Atlanta OK Surveillance Center, cameras to watch the city. That's from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Florida makes $63 million selling driver's info. That's from Local10.com. San Francisco police arrest 35 who were protesting their fatal shooting. Protesting the cops murdering a guy. Boston Herald, license scanner crosses the line as the Boston database builds. And our last note of related police state updates from FoxNews.com. New documents in the Fort Hood shooting case raise concerns about prosecution's handling of evidence. The psychological operations come fast and furious, so to be forgiven for forgetting about the Fort Hood shooting psyop. A new filing in the Fort Hood case shows that a key White House intelligence report on the Fort Hood shooting in November 2009 is still being withheld from the defense. The Army also admits that it doesn't have all the emails exchanged between the accused shooter, Major Nidal Hassan, and the first American on the CIA's kill or capture list, the man who has dined at the Pentagon with military officials, Anwar Awlaki. The CIA lackey. Now, when I hit that link to go hit this story, new documents in the Fort Hood shooting case, I see the updated breaking news banner on Fox News. Norwegian police now say 7 confirmed dead in the Oslo explosion this morning. And I suppose it remains to be seen how long it will take for the finger to be pointed to some intelligence-connected Patsy terror network. No disrespect to families. Oh, geez. Now, okay, we're glancing back at the breaking news on Google. 57 minutes ago from the New York Times, deadly blasts in Norway are followed by gun attack. Powerful explosions shook central Oslo on Friday afternoon. It doesn't say anything about the gun attack. Let's investigate this, friends. And, of course, as I already did when I got the first story from Steve earlier this morning about the Oslo attack, save your pages, because you know they're going to change them out from under you as the story changes and solidifies into the official story. Shortly after the explosions, which appeared to be a bomb attack, a man dressed as a police officer opened fire on a summer camp for young members of the ruling Labour Party on the island of Utøya in the Oslo Fjord, about 25 miles from the city, wounding at least 5. Save. All right. Let's continue back to MediaMonarchy.com, and again, we'll continue to read into the record updates as they become available and as we work them into this show that may be a little supersized. 97-year-old cleared of Nazi war crimes charges from GodDiscussion.com. 97-year-old Sandor Kapiro, that's S-A-N-D-O-R, K-E-P-I-O-R, suspected of Nazi war crimes, was acquitted by a Hungarian court. Kapiro topped the most wanted list at the Simon Wiesenthal Center. He had been accused of ordering the executions of 35 Jews and Serbs in Serbia during World War II. Kapiro says that he was a police captain on the forces that invaded northern Serbia. Jewish groups and Serbian officials say the verdict is outrageous and they will push for an appeal as the 97-year-old Sandor Kapiro cleared of Nazi war crimes charges.
Relatives and supporters celebrate as Sandor Kapiro is found not guilty of war crimes. The 97-year-old was accused of ordering the murder of 35 Jews and Serbs during World War II. He topped the most wanted list at the Simon Wiesenthal Center, which works to bring alleged Nazi criminals to justice.
See this photograph of this nice, beautiful young 9-year-old girl? She's one of the people whose Kapiro's men rounded up, and she was taken to the Danube, and she was murdered. So, quite frankly, I find this verdict outrageous, absurd, and we'll do everything possible to see that it's overturned.
Kapiro, seen here 4 years ago, was a police captain under Hungarian forces that invaded northern Serbia. In 1942 in Novi Sad, they carried out raids against anti-Nazi partisans, killing about 800 Serbs and 400 Jews. This memorial by the Danube is dedicated to the victims. Serbia's war crimes prosecutor was in court to hear the verdict.
I'm not satisfied. I expected that he would be pronounced guilty and sentenced. I expected that the Hungarian court would put an end to these ugly times.
Sandor Kapiro was convicted in 1944, but that was overturned by the fascist government. Kapiro, who lived in Argentina for decades, admitted supervising the identification of people being rounded up, but denied knowing they'd be executed. Teodor Kovac survived the massacre.
My reaction, I am in distress, I am bitter, I am in shock, and I am sure that the majority of people from Novi Sad feel the same.
Serbian prosecutors say they now expect their Hungarian counterparts to appeal the verdict. Nadim Baba, Al Jazeera.
Meanwhile, top Nazi Rudolf Hess exhumed from his pilgrimage grave.
The remains of Rudolf Hess, Adolf Hitler's former deputy, have been exhumed from a grave in the small Bavarian town of Wunsiedel. Officials removed the grave and headstone in order to prevent hordes of neo-Nazi pilgrims descending on the small community. It's good he's gone. We hope they don't come back. It's great for us because every year it restricts us. We have nothing to do with it. There are problems with the traffic and we don't want to take our children into town. Every year, on the 17th of August, hundreds of Nazi sympathizers commemorate the death of Hess. His bones were taken to a crematorium and his ashes scattered at sea. One of Hitler's closest allies, Hess was captured after flying to Scotland in 1941 on an apparent peace mission. He was convicted of war crimes at the Nuremberg trials and sentenced to life imprisonment.
Press TV reporting Iran unveils documents on World War II. Iran's president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has attended a ceremony unveiling a five-volume book series which includes documents on the occupation of Iran during the Second World War, saying, quote, "These documents lay bare the face of plunderers." Our other related history mystery updates posted below this Nazi update on the anthrax attacks. As the Justice Department destroys the FBI case, then does a 180 reversal days later. You can get one from InfoWars and the other from BioPrepWatch.com. Justice Department reverses course on Ivins. The DOJ recently submitted court documents correcting a legal filing in order to reassert its conclusion that a lone federal scientist was behind the 2001 anthrax attacks that killed 5 and sickened 17. Court paper submitted last week suggested that the Justice Department may have altered its position that Dr. Bruce Ivins was the perpetrator, according to Boston.com. The government announced that it was not changing its position and that the previous filings contained inaccurate information, to say the very least. Our last related history mystery note, much too long to get into, but a fascinating angle to the Oswald conspiracy. Groundbreaking interview with Oswald's girlfriend, Judith Very Baker. If you're a follower of Black Op Radio, you may be familiar with her story. This interview in its entirety, I believe, is, yes, it's on theintelhub.com, and it's posted on the Not For Sale to NWO YouTube channel, which has the unlimited time, which lets a bunch of amazing videos go up. And I notice more and more that folks like myself or James Corbett can't seem to be granted a director account from the gods of YouTube, but the lucky handful that do end up helping out their friends to upload long videos instead of breaking it into 27 parts. You can put a whole 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour video up. I believe this is nearly 2 hours. Groundbreaking interview with Oswald's girlfriend, Judith Very Baker. Meanwhile, the Obamasiah threatens Armageddon, warns U.S. running out of time. U.S. President Barack Obama pressed polarized lawmakers to avert what he called economic Armageddon by quickly forging a deal to prevent an early August debt default by the world's richest country. Simply put, it will take a balanced approach, shared sacrifice, and a willingness to make unpopular choices on all our parts. That means spending less on domestic programs. Let me be clear. It means spending less on defense programs, editorial. And it means taking on the tax code and cutting out certain tax breaks and deductions for the wealthiest Americans. All these and other amazing platitudes and threatagana tactics from the man in Wall Street's pockets who worked for Business International Corporation, a known front for the Central Intelligence Agency, picked and molded by Zbigniew Brzezinski out of Columbia University, those lost years that no one can find anything out about. And yet, the conversation I had with a poor woman at the store the other day, I believe she said these actual words, I just love Obama. And I had to bite my tongue. Yet again. But let's break it down. As this charade is reaching its crescendo, with a video update posted up by way of DailyBail.com, Bankrupting America, A History of the U.S. Debt Ceiling.
So here's the deal with the debt ceiling. It's just not working. Since 1940, lawmakers have increased the debt ceiling, which is the limit on debt that the government sets for itself, nearly 100 times. As spending has gotten really out of control, the ceiling has been raised 10 times over the last decade alone. This overspending has saddled taxpayers with a debt of over $14 trillion, nearly the size of our entire economy. Why then would some in Washington want to increase the ceiling again? The fear is that by allowing the national debt to exceed the debt ceiling, we would signal to lenders of our debt that we're bankrupt, and we'd default. Is it true? Yes and no. Like a person with credit card debt, Washington won't default so long as it continues to pay the interest payments on its debt, which it can pay. The $200 billion in interest payments Congress owes this year will be more than covered by the $2.2 trillion it will collect in taxes. Plus, if Washington had to, it could pay all of its bills for months by doing things like selling stuff it owns but doesn't really use, shifting cash around, and borrowing money from the Federal Reserve that doesn't actually count for the debt ceiling. That still would only be a band-aid that hides the real problem. The amount the government takes in is only 60% of what it spends,
so we will go bankrupt.
Spending has increased far above its healthier historic average, and without reform, we'll shoot way up and never look back. If we really want to avoid default, lawmakers should worry less about raising the ceiling in the next few weeks, and more about cutting spending now. Send this video to others, so they too learn the fact you'll only find beyond the headlines.
And again, that came from DailyBail.com. But meanwhile, Moody's, you know, the one who cuts all our ratings to junk because we let international gangsters and banksters and interbred, multi-generational serial killer oligarchs take all the real and sell us the fake. Moody's suggests U.S. eliminate debt ceiling. More on that from Cryptogon.com. And we have all our other related econocrash updates. Too big to fail? Ten banks own 77% of all U.S. banking assets. Another fantastic piece from BlacklistedNews.com. Dear Mr. Obama, setting the record straight from the Intel Hub, banks pay back TARP funds by borrowing from the Treasury. That's from Finance on Yahoo. Taxpayers lose $1.3 billion as the government exits Chrysler. Congress addressing Postal Service losses. We've been intimating the Postal Service destruction for quite some time, and last week even connected it to the Netflix price hike. But you can get more on that from the Washington Post. And I tweeted the story earlier in the week, but it was only earlier this morning that I came up with the line that I need to tweet out, as they're selling it all, even the shelves. But here's the phrase that pays. The only borders that the United States can manage to close is a bookstore.
Covering the economy now, Rhode Islanders will soon have one less place to find that next good read. Borders is closing all of its remaining stores as early as Friday, and the liquidation could be complete by September the 30th. The 40-year-old company was unable to find a buyer willing to pull it out of bankruptcy. Borders has 399 stores left, including several in Rhode Island and Massachusetts.
Again, the only borders the United States knows how to close down. Meanwhile, mortgage robo-signing continues in Michigan and other states. That's from the Associated Press, and we close out our EconoCrash updates with one from a raw story, as Dallas County, Texas rental voucher event leads to stampedes and injuries.
Come on, it was a done deal. Everybody just called out, you know what I'm saying, like it was an old horse race or something.
A chaotic scene as hundreds make a run for the door and a chance at Dallas County housing vouchers. That story topping our news this midday. Thank you for joining us, everyone. I'm Ron Corning. Rental assistance at what price? At least 8 people suffered injuries while trying to line up this morning to apply for a limited number of Dallas County rental vouchers. That after waiting for hours in their cars. Channel 8's Cynthia Vega joining us live now from the Jesse Owens Memorial Complex in Dallas with more on what happened there. Hi, Cynthia.
Well, hi. Good afternoon to you. You know, the organizers are telling us they did expect a huge crowd, given the state of the economy and given that those with no to low income are truly in need of rental assistance. But, in fact, people began arriving as early as 4 o'clock yesterday, but they had to park, Ron, all the way across the street. And many of them stayed there all through the night on a very hot night. And you could just imagine at 5:30 this morning when the gates finally opened, that's when things got out of hand.
I saw people run, so I started running and I slipped and fell all over the pavement. In my knee, my arm.
Jordan's Spivey's all scuffed up after taking quite a tumble this morning, but grateful she wasn't trampled, too, as hundreds raced to be first in line to apply for a Dallas County voucher for rental housing assistance.
It was a madhouse.
Ada McKenzie also injured as the crowd closed in around the door.
As you can see, the white all on my arm from being pinned up against the wall so strongly. People pushing, fighting.
Ambulances arrived with paramedics treating at least 7 to 8 people injured as the chaos continued.
At the front door, and then the loud say that they're going to mace. So when they said that, that's why everybody started running. And then they said, no, we're not going to mace. The line is on the other side.
I think it was really unorganized because a lot of people that was hurt first really end up at the end because they couldn't run fast enough.
So many people had pulled up in their cars by 2 this morning. The line along Polk Street stretched more than a mile back. Many sitting out on the median. Security nearby. When word got out, the doors opened an hour and a half early. That's when people began racing for the opportunity to fill out an application for housing assistance. Was it worth it?
I hope so. I mean, I'm a student working 3 jobs, so I would definitely, you know, need help with my rent.
As many as 15,000 people are expected to show up here to apply for rental assistance throughout the day. And to give you some idea of what's available, Dallas County has 3,800 vouchers, and only 100 are available right now. The rest will be freed up over the next few years as people come off that rental assistance. And these people right now, if they qualify, will then get that rental assistance. But for those who were parked across the street last night, they want to know, why couldn't they use this parking lot? It didn't open up until 6 o'clock this morning. Well, organizers say they were not supposed to show up that early. Reporting live here in Dallas, I'm Cynthia Vega, Channel 8 News.
And the chaos continues as we turn back to the breaking news on the Oslo op. Jerusalem Post reports 6 minutes ago, bomb kills 7 in Oslo, several dead in youth camp shooting. That's still not seeming confirmed yet. Gunman opens fire at Norway youth camp. Deaths reported, says ABC News. We now reach, ladies and gentlemen, finally, the one and only News Purge. It's the 721 News Purge on MediaMonarchy.com. Burn for it, Witch's Wand. Of course, our opening tracks at the beginning of this episode, 226 from Sloan. And we begin, as always, on the News Purge, alphabetically, with our 9/11 updates, and of course, it weaves through it all, as we noted for you, interestingly enough, from Fox News. Relatives of 9/11 victims asked the FBI on Monday to brief them on its probe into allegations that News Corp journalists sought to hack into terror victims' phones. The allegations surfaced in the British newspaper The Daily Mirror last week, quoting an unnamed source. The paper reported that an American investigator had been approached by News of the World journalists offering money for phone records of the dead, but he turned them down. The News of the World tabloid was shut down after it was accused of hacking into the phones of public figures and crime victims. Where, again, from Raw Story, journalist notes, if 9/11 victims were hacked, Fox News is finished.
Murdoch, as we're saying, has tried to appease the UK public today. I can see the Houses of Parliament behind you. What do you make of the political reaction from those he's influenced for so long?
It's all out war, really, because the political classes here finally feel freed up for the first time in decades and decades. So I don't think appeasing Murdoch will particularly work. Everyone is watching for Tuesday's committee where Rupert Murdoch and his son James will appear. So it'll be interesting to see that. But I think we should remember that the Prime Minister here behind me, well, probably not today because it's Saturday, said, the truth is we've all been in this together, the press, politicians and leaders of all parties, and yes, that includes me. Very sorry indictment for democracy in this country coming through there.
Well, you're implying that members of Parliament won't be frightened of him anymore, and of course, nor will they be able to rely on him to sway public opinion in their favour. So do you think this will have a major impact on British politics in the future?
I suppose one could say that it was multinationals who are using Murdoch in a way, so they're lobbying Rupert Murdoch. It's the big companies, big multinationals and so forth that seem to get things done by their helping MPs behind me. Perhaps not as bad as in Washington, but I don't think it's the end of outside influences, outside undemocratic forces as regards influences on parliamentarians behind me.
You made a reference to David Cameron there. Well, his close links, of course, have come to light with News International. Embarrassing or potentially damaging?
I think they are potentially damaging. More and more news is coming out in the past few hours of Rupert Murdoch's meetings, his executives' meetings with the Prime Minister. As we all know, the Prime Minister appointed as his press secretary the man that is under investigation and who was arrested in the past few days. A very sorry sight, but then again, the opposition were in on it all too, as was the previous Prime Minister. It's a kind of cesspit of democracy, and it's finally unravelling to the British public. What their reaction will be is anyone's guess.
Murdoch certainly has his enemies, though, doesn't he? Apart from what looks like self-destruction, could there actually be a movement trying to manipulate his media empire's downfall?
It is interesting that he owned these newspapers, and they always say Rupert Murdoch loves newspapers. He basically had newspapers so that he could manipulate monopoly concerns over his broadcast interests, which actually did make money, unlike the newspapers. Newspapers are just a tool, as it were. And, of course, he did make enemies doing that. I mean, in Italy, he's appointed Tom Mockridge to replace his closest person on the News Corp board. There's Hinton who left. Silvio Berlusconi did it differently, though. He bought the papers, bought the media, and then bought the political party and actually became leader of the country. He has lots of enemies out there. He probably has lots of ammunition to hurl back at them, though, thanks to all those muckraking journalists who spent their time, looking at sex scandals, really.
But for him, obviously the paper's a great way of forming or influencing public opinion. As you say, the TV channels are the ones that make money. Now, if criminal charges are brought against the management, then that could have a serious impact on his future TV empire, couldn't it? Because the requirement of what is to be fit and proper to run these channels, and that would actually change that status of him, wouldn't it, if indeed he was accountable and had criminal charges brought against him.
Very much so. He does have lots of friends, one should add, but it looks, as some MPs have it, unbelievable that he has the right to own any form of media in this country. And I know you're about to, hopefully we're about to talk about the United States, because that's where it gets really interesting.
We are, because the FBI is now investigating the allegations into the phone hacking of 9/11 victims. Now, how serious is this? This isn't just what's happening in the UK now, this is what's happening in the US. How serious is this development?
It's very serious indeed. The Democratic Party in Congress is a forlorn party. It doesn't really have anything, any hope left now that President Obama has so destroyed his reputation, warmongering and his sort of Reaganite economic policies as he deals with the deficit. So Democrats have nothing much to do, but they all hate one particular influential cable channel, Fox News. And I'm hearing that if the 9/11 victims have been hacked by subsidiaries of News Corp, then Fox News is finished.
And finally, quick reaction, the White House would relish that, wouldn't it, bearing in mind its relationship with Fox News?
Yeah, President Obama probably would relish it, but how it took the most curious cases of hacking the phones rather than any kind of regulatory body to be able to get Murdoch to finally overthrow him, as it were, is an amazing story. We'll be all, I'm sure, be looking forward to the Hollywood blockbusters. Not probably on 20th Century Fox.
Good point. Afshin, thanks very much indeed. Afshin Ratansi joining us live there in London.
So much to note in that piece that it now returns to the States as we approach the 10th anniversary of the event that changed everything, the official version of September 11th, could we find nuggets of 9/11 truth within evidence and clues within the phone hacking story? And at best, is this the elites battling over turf and territory and hopefully bumping each other off, which may actually benefit us a little bit? We can hope. This could also just be, of course, another problem, reaction, solution, situation. But let's grab our other related 9/11 updates. NFL star Rashard Mendenhall sues ex-sponsor Champion over his 9/11 truth tweets. Meanwhile, John Stewart casually admits to CIA prior knowledge of 9/11. That's from DeadlineLive.info. And new 9/11 timeline entries on HistoryCommons.org get into the military exercises, Air Force response, and so much more. And from AE911Truth.org, Eyewitness to Demolition, a new video compilation bringing together dozens of explosive 9/11 accounts. We move down the news purge to our BioWars Enviro Health updates as things get more and more serious by the moment. And the difference between the Los Alamos fire and other wildfires can be summed up in a single word: radiation. If you haven't subscribed to ENENews.com for all the related breaking news concerning Fukushima, Los Alamos, Fort Cooper, and more, you are missing it. Flash floods near Los Alamos could wash through canyons full of nuclear waste. That's from the Intel Hub. And fascinating. Investigative reports from WDEF from the Columbia Broadcasting System. We have several links related to this two-part story. CBS investigative report on the safety of the new reactor at Watts Bar, Tennessee nuke plant.
Walk through the front door of Ann Harris's house in rural Tennessee, and you'll meet one of the most unlikely and feared advocates for nuclear safety.
I began as a clerk in instrumentation engineering at Watts Bar and construction on Unit 1. And I could barely spell nuclear when I went to work.
What's the turning point for you?
Basically, the books are being cooked. People are saying things are not being... They swear under oath that it's been done, and it hadn't been done.
When Harris refused to sign a multi-million-dollar construction contract riddled with errors, she says Tennessee Valley Authority executives told her career was over. Instead, it sparked a 28-year crusade devoted to preventing a nuclear accident.
You can see a Fukushima happening here in the U.S.
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of
when.
CBS News has obtained a copy of this NRC post-Fukushima Watts Bar report dated May 2011. We had two nuclear engineers look at the report. One gave Watts Bar a D- and called it appalling. The other cited what he called more than 40 disturbing findings during a 40-hour inspection, including a lack of emergency responder training, faulty control panels, malfunctioning communications equipment, and issues with portable backup diesel generators.
Why isn't the NRC pounding on the door of Watts Bar saying, look, we need these problems fixed? I think the fact that there hasn't been a major reactor accident in the United States for over 3 decades allows the industry and the NRC to become complacent. And are they just gambling, taking one huge risk with people's lives with these reactors, particularly Watts Bar? In some respects, it's the biggest poker game in the country. You're playing high-stakes poker with American lives.
Well, I think that's absurd.
Bill McCollum, chief operating officer of the TVA, says the NRC's findings are far outweighed by safeguards built in to Watts Bar.
We're certainly going to take those seriously, correct those issues. And then even beyond that, our own reviews of the events in Japan have shown us that we have opportunities to bring in additional backup equipment that will make our response even more robust.
Tucked into the foothills of eastern Tennessee, Watts Bar took 23 years to build at a cost of nearly $8 billion. It was shut down in the mid-1980s over an avalanche of safety issues. In 1986, this independent report alone documented more than 5,000 concerns. Roger Hanna is a top spokesman for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
The NRC treats every single allegation very seriously. Doesn't matter what the source. It doesn't matter what the subject. We look at it. We screen those allegations. We have done that for years. All the allegations that were provided over the years at Watts Bar have been addressed in one way or another. If we had doubts about the ability of TVA to operate the Watts Bar plant safely, we would not allow that plant to operate.
You'd shut it down.
Absolutely.
To that end, TVA executives gave us an extensive tour of Watts Bar's reactor and its twin, Watts Bar 2, scheduled to go online next fall.
These are part of our emergency backup in case we lose off-site power.
They showed us these diesel-powered generators, one of four critical backup systems to keep water flowing to the reactor, preventing a meltdown.
That is the reactor head. This one is actually down in this bit here.
And here's the main control room, said to be able to shut down the reactor in less than 3 seconds.
Yeah, TVA, every 5 weeks, every operator goes through a week of training.
You'll have to pardon Ann Harris if she's heard it all before. She's won a record 6 whistleblower lawsuits against Watts Bar over issues like millions of feet of faulty electrical cable. And says she's paid a price for speaking out.
There has certainly been attempts at intimidation, recrimination, and really threats on your life.
Yes. They ran me off the road. They wired my car for firebombing. They dropped the universal joint out of my car.
Harris left the TVA in 1997, but says she's still taking late-night calls from whistleblowers, still driven to hold the TVA and NRC accountable, standing square in the crosshairs of the nuclear power debate.
From WDEF, CBS investigated a report on the safety of the new reactor at Watts Bar, Tennessee nuke plant, where a whistleblower says the books are being cooked. You can see a Fukushima happening here in the U.S., and they wired my car for firebombing. The part two of that story, I did not grab the clip for you. Whistleblowers terrified at TVA nuke plants, and as we look around the world, we need to protect our whistleblowers even more. Anomaly detected in Exxon pipeline before the rupture in Yellowstone River. That's from the Intel Hub. Second major spill in Montana in 2 weeks. That's from ReedPerry.com. And from the NHK, Fukushima has high levels of radioactivity found extensively. Meanwhile, China denies cover-up of ConocoPhillips oil spill. CERN scientists gagged on politically incorrect global warming data as the UN Security Council to consider climate change peacekeeping. Hence the aforementioned blue helmets turning into green helmets. Now, perhaps this little bit of satire should have been posted up along with the Gerson tapes, but here it is at the end of our BioWars EnviroHealth updates.
It's the Onion Radio News. An absent-minded professor says the cure for cancer is around here somewhere. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Johns Hopkins University professor Humbert E. Huggins revealed today that after decades of research, he has discovered a 100% infallible cure for cancer and that he is reasonably certain it is somewhere in his Baltimore, Maryland home.
This is possibly the greatest medical breakthrough in history, and it's also quite possibly somewhere in a box in the dining room table or in the basement someplace. Then again, I could have set it down in the garage.
The formula for the cure is said to require easily available materials costing only pennies and could eradicate the dreaded disease by the end of the year if it turns up somewhere. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
And we move to our drug war updates as alarming bath salts stimulant sold legally in many states. The latest moral drug panic brought to you by BendBulletin.com. As I had to find a way around the New York Times paywall that seems to be increasingly slamming in my face. More Fast and Furious from the feds. Mexican gun smuggling cartel figures possibly were paid FBI informants. Possibly. Fast and Furious, Operation Gunrunner, the ATF and the DEA knowingly running drugs to Mexican cartels. Problem, reaction, solution. Hello, North American Union. But a positive drug story from Jezebel.com. Perhaps in the past, in the archives of MediaMonarchy.com, we've referenced Prussia Blue. It was a neo-Nazi girl group, two sisters, raised by their parents to be hateful, racist Nazis and sing songs related to it. Now, however, neo-Nazi girl group cured of their hate with marijuana. And our last drug war update keeps us high as Israeli nursing home prescribes medical marijuana.
Some medical patients suffer from such severe pain that no medicine can help. However, there is a natural remedy which can bring some relief. A geriatric home in Israel prescribes medical cannabis to some of their patients suffering from certain ailments. Here's more from our Israeli bureau.
At Hadaran Geriatric Home, medical cannabis is weighed and given to some of the patients. Among them, Moshe Rot. He receives medical cannabis as a powder mixed with tobacco.
What does it do? It makes me tranquil and less uptight. I'm able to take it easy and I feel restful. Before that, my hands were in pain, like someone suffering from Parkinson's disease. It stopped after 3 months. My hands don't shake anymore and it's totally different.
A television program on medical cannabis caught the attention of the geriatric home's head nurse.
We were simply looking for some kind of medicine that would bring relief, and we found it.
Since the 19th century, cannabis has been known to ease pain. And since 2008, the Israeli Ministry of Health has given limited permits for companies providing medical cannabis, allowing patients to use it for the relief of diseases and severe side effects. According to the chairman of the Israeli Pharmaceutical Federation, there are some concerns that the cannabis may be used for non-medical purposes. Another concern is that it will become too easy for the medical establishment to prescribe cannabis for any problem, although current research is not yet completely clear on the appropriate use of cannabis. Public pressure is also playing a role.
On one hand, the Ministry of Health doesn't grow these plants. On the other hand, the DNA of the Israel Anti-Drug Authority is drugs, and we're talking about a product that is a drug but also used for medical treatment, and they don't know how to deal with it. Finally, there are the police, who are afraid that it could spill over to yet another market.
And we go from the Israeli nursing home to geopolitics at large, where the guard who killed Hamid Karzai's brother was a trusted CIA contact. More on that from The Independent. Israeli killed in Christchurch earthquake in New Zealand, which rang in our new year 2011. He was carrying 5 passports. And it's this kind of story that Cryptogon.com really shines with all the amazing updates tracking the disappearance of this story. With updates and updates and updates, Israelis were flown from Christchurch to Wellington, and the story being almost completely censored. First published by the Southland Times, this now massive post from Cryptogon.com gets into the story of the Israeli killed in the Christchurch earthquake while carrying 5 passports. I believe the extrapolation is that generally Israeli intelligence used stolen passports to carry out assassinations worldwide in false flag operations. An op-ed from the New York Times, not befitting a democracy, new Israeli law to stifle critics of Israel. And we close our geopolitics with the Putin army. And the boob meme continues, Putin army of women to strip naked to show their support for Vladimir Putin. I could play the video for you, but it's all in Russian, and you just need to go lay your eyes on it yourself. We move quite easily to our media meme updates with hashtag Mossad Milchan. New book tells the tale of the Israeli arms dealer at home in Hollywood. Never tell jokes about a man with easy access to weapons of mass destruction, Peter Chernin, former News Corporation official, once lightheartedly warned of Arnon Milchan, M-I-L-C-H-A-N, who has long tantalized Hollywood with his dual identity as a producer of popular movies and a businessman tied to the arms industry. Mr. Chernin may have been even more right than he knew. Confidential, the life of secret agent turned Hollywood tycoon Arnon Milchan. Written by Meyer Doron and Joseph Gelman and set for publication on July 30th by Geffen Books, but not that Geffen. This is one F in the Geffen. Now holds that Mr. Milchan, whose credits include Love and Other Drugs and Night and Day, those fantastic films, at least through the mid-1980s, was a full-fledged operative for Israel's top-secret intelligence agency, LACAM. The acronym is from the Hebrew for the blandly named Science Liaison Bureau. In that capacity, according to the book, Mr. Milchan supervised government-backed accounts and front companies that financed the special needs of the entirety of Israel's intelligence operations outside the country. These special needs, serviced by Mr. Milchan, who's now 66 years old, included buying components to build and maintain Israel's nuclear arsenal. But with the indictment in 1985 of Richard Kelly Smythe, an aerospace executive who had made illegal shipments of nuclear triggers through Milchan's companies, Mr. Milchan unexpectedly found his arms dealing in the news, even as he was wrangling with Universal Pictures over the near collapse of the movie Brazil, directed by Terry Gilliam. Mr. Smythe became a fugitive, finally arrested in 2001, convicted and imprisoned, released on probation in 2005. Milchan was not accused of wrongdoing, but the case drew scrutiny to his activities in the arms business, even as he stepped up his film career under deals first at Warner Brothers, then at Rupert Murdoch's 20th Century Fox, whose parent company bought a stake in his Regency Enterprises. In the glow of friendships with the likes of Brad Pitt and Robert De Niro, speculation about his intrigue seemed to fade. Until a pair of unlikely biographers decided to figure out why Israel had been filtering a large part of its military budget through Hollywood hands. Confidential, the secret, or rather the life of, secret agent turned Hollywood tycoon Arnon Milchan. We will have to pick up that book as a used copy. And if you go to this post on MediaMonarchy.com, you can see my original Photoshop mashup of Arnon Milchan rocking a new, more truthful t-shirt while he hangs with Brangelina. As we noted time and time again, the phone hacking scandal weaves its way throughout every story as rocker Billy Bragg's scathing new song for News Corp, Never by the Sun.
Someone's hiding in the bushes with a telephoto lens, while their editor assures them the means justify the ends. 'Cause we only hunt celebrities and it's all a bit of fun, but the scousers never buy the sun. The parents of the missing girl cling desperately to hope, while a copper takes improper payments in a thick brown envelope. And nobody in the newsroom asks where this information's from, but the scousers never buy the sun. Tabloids make their money betting bullshit baffles brains, and they cynically hold up their hands if anyone complains. And they say, well, we're just giving the people what they want. Well, they're crying out for justice, people crying out for justice. And the man they call the digger cast a proprietary eye over what goes on in the gutter, what happens in the sky, and he claims he's fit and proper. The watchdog sings his song, but the scousers never buy the sun. International executives, they hang their head in shame, tell us with their hands on heart that the paper boy is to blame. But everyone who loves that kiss and tell, you must share the blame as well. But the scousers never buy the sun. Tabloids making millions, betting bullshit baffles brains, and they cynically hold up their hands if anyone complains. And just say, look, we're just giving the people what they want. well, they're crying out for justice. People crying out for justice in the corridors of power. They all sit down to sup with the devil and his minions. And they ask for his opinions. And the politicians wring their hands and say what's to be done. But the scousers never buy the sun. Well, no one comes out well in this when all is said and done. But the scousers never buy the sun.
Billy Bragg with his brand new original song related to hashtag phone hacking, Never by the Sun. As we continue with our media meme updates on the 721 News Purge, burn for it, witch's wand. And like so many other areas, my girlfriend noticed it first, and that is this 90s flashback. It's all back. And as it was brought to my attention then, it started to appear everywhere, like when I opened the New York Times at work and saw the good old days of 20 years ago. Are 18 to 34-year-olds too young to be nostalgic? Evidently not. Starting this Monday, Teen Nick, part of the Nickelodeon family of cable channels for children, will start rebroadcasting old series from the 90s that are considered classics by young adults. That's right, classics from the 90s. And then the new issue of Spin appeared in my mailbox. The 20th anniversary of the album that changed everything, What Nevermind Means Now. Of course, Nirvana's Nevermind, 20 years old. Huge rundown from Spin magazine, and it all keeps regressing. Perhaps we're all regressing on some level. I know I've been regressing in a way to some of the things I listened to in the early 90s. Watch out for that mixtape coming very soon. So, my friends, as we've now busted into the third hour on this epic episode 226 from MediaMonarchy.com, as we were given the little bit of space to go long, so by God, we're going to take it. That gives us more time to do more things and play more clips. And again, something that wasn't really planned. As the memes start to present themselves, as the show unfurls, let's just dive into the good old days of 20 years ago with a little bit of an update. The Polyphonic Spree's Lithium.
Cause today I found my friends, they're in my head. I'm so ugly, but that's okay, cause so are you. We broke our mirrors, Sunday morning is every day for all I care. But I'm not scared, light my candles in a daze, cause I found God. So lonely, that's okay, I shaved my head, and I'm not sad, and just maybe I'm to blame for all I've heard, but I'm not sure, I'm so excited, I can't wait to meet you there, but I don't care, I'm so horny, that's okay, my will is here. Yeah.
Cause today I found my friends, they're in my head. I'm so ugly, but that's okay, cause so are you. We broke our mirrors. Sunday morning is every day for all I care, but I'm not scared. Light my candles in a daze, cause I found you.
From their 2006 EP, Wait, that is the Polyphonic Spree, of course, covering Lithium from the album from 20 years ago that changed everything, according to Spin, and that would be Nirvana's Nevermind. Continuing our media memes and leaving us asking again the question, what year is this? Stage collapses during Cheap Trick performance in Ottawa as the new film Contagion brings bird flu fear-mongering to great new levels.
It was a groundbreaking ceremony for a new factory.
Did she mention seeing anyone who was sick? Anyone on a plane at the airport?
No, she said she was jet-lagged.
The average person touches their face 3 to 5 times every waking minute. In between, we're touching doorknobs, water fountains, and each other.
Matt! Mom? No, go up to your room, honey.
So we have a virus, no treatment protocol, and no vaccine at this time.
You had a seizure this morning, Beth.
Is she the history of seizures?
No.
Allergy?
As of last night, there were 32 cases.
Unfortunately, she did die.
Can I go talk to her?
Mr. Amoff, your wife is dead.
What are you talking about? What happened to her? What happened to her?
Is there any way someone could weaponize the bird flu? Is that what we're looking at?
Someone doesn't have to weaponize the bird flu. The birds are doing that.
Watch this. It's transmission, so we just need to know which direction.
On day one, there were 2 people, and then 4, and then 16. In 3 months, it's a billion. That's where we're headed.
They're calling out the National Guard. They're moving the president underground.
People will panic.
Get away!
People tip over.
The truth is being kept from the world.
Cook your samples, destroy everything. Hello. I need you to get me the names of everyone who serviced this room. It's an emergency.
You can't panic now.
I know.
I'm going to get you home.
I got people, too, Dr. Cheever. We all do.
Don't talk to anyone. Don't touch anyone. Stay away from other people.
The president is here.
We're not sick!
is figuring us out faster than we're figuring it out.
It's mutated.
Contagion, coming soon to a predictive programming palace near you. Continuing our media meme updates, super gods. What masked vigilantes, miraculous mutants, and a Smallville sun god can teach us about being human? That is the brand new book from Invisibles author Grant Morrison, where he surveys and sizes up superheroes. More on that from the book review of the New York Times. We close out our media memes with a quick reference to the latest thing I added to my watch later on YouTube, and that is the 3+ hour documentary on Jan Ervin's Gnostic Media YouTube channel, Secrets in Plain Sight. Now we get further into a story we covered last week for you, and that was the mysterious death of Big Pharma CEO's girlfriend, and the company is called Medicis, and it did not reference last week. What I constantly think whenever I see that word is that it's the Medicis. But now, another way, another hat tip to Cryptogon.com for following and updating and uncovering this story as Big Pharma billionaire's son and girlfriend die within days of each other, and the girlfriend's body was bound and naked and found hanging from the mansion's balcony.
Detectives this morning are investigating the mysterious death of a woman whose nude body was found bound and hanging from a balcony of the historic Spreckles Mansion in Coronado. Police say they don't know if Rebecca Nalepa was murdered or if she killed herself. Her boyfriend, Jonah Shacknight, a CEO of a pharmaceutical company, owns the mansion, but it was his brother who found her and called 911. Earlier this week, police responded to another emergency call at the same place. Shacknight's 6-year-old son had fallen down some stairs. The boy suffered serious injuries and remains hospitalized.
Authorities in Coronado, California are investigating what they call the suspicious death of the girlfriend of a pharmaceutical company CEO. Senior correspondent Scott Cohn is in the newsroom with the very latest. Scott.
Brian, apparently was a grisly scene at the oceanfront mansion owned by Jonah Shacknight, the CEO and founder of the specialty drug company Medicis. We now have video in from the scene. A woman identified as Shacknight's girlfriend, 32-year-old Rebecca Nalepa, found hanged with a rope, completely nude, her hands and feet bound. Police say Jonah Shacknight was not at home. His brother Adam Shacknight, who was staying at a guest house, discovered the body, cut it down, and then called police.
When the coroner units arrived at the scene, they located a female on the property who appeared to be deceased. The victim's hands and feet were bound, and she was completely nude.
Police do say that the death is suspicious, but yet they are not, the homicide team investigating, they haven't ruled out those suicide, and they have not yet named any suspects. And earlier in the week at the same home, Jonah Shacknight's 6-year-old son was hospitalized after apparently falling down the stairs at the mansion, but authorities say they have not found any connection between the two incidents. Medicis, with $700 million in sales last year, may be best known for the wrinkle-removing medication Restylane, the acne medication Solidin, and trivial in comparison to this, but the stock did plunge in the news. You can see the news came out just after, or just before the market opened this morning, I should say, and it remains down more than 4% at this hour. But again, Jonah Shacknight apparently was not home, but just a tragic situation at the CEO and founder of the company's home in California.
Indeed. Scott Cohn, thank you very much.
Strange new details emerging about the death of a prominent Valley CEO's girlfriend found dead inside his California mansion. Thanks for choosing us. I'm Steve Irvin.
And I'm Katie Rammel. Investigators are calling this a very bizarre death, and today released graphic details about it. ABC 15's Corey Rangel is live with more on how she was found.
Katie, investigators say she was found naked and hanging from a second floor bedroom balcony, and at this point, they still don't know how she got there.
Investigators say 32-year-old Rebecca Nalepa was found hanging. You can see the rope that was tied around her neck. Her feet and hands were also bound.
This is a very bizarre death. There's no doubt about it.
I'm told Nalepa lived in the Valley and had been dating Jonah Shacknight, the CEO of Medicis Pharmaceuticals based in Scottsdale. Investigators say Shacknight was not at home at the time his girlfriend was found at his mansion. His brother is the one who found Nalepa and called 911.
Adam Shacknight informed us that he cut her down when he found her.
Despite the suspicious death, investigators still don't know if she was murdered or not.
There's roughly 200 years of experience in the Sheriff's Homicide Unit. They all agree. This is a very unusual circumstances. The scene was pretty suspicious. We are not ready to determine whether it was a suicide or a criminal act.
In another twist, police were called to the home just 2 days earlier after Shacknai's 6-year-old son apparently fell down some stairs. Investigators say he was not breathing and did not have a pulse. He is still in the hospital. We're told Shacknai was with his son at the time his girlfriend was found.
Right now, we don't see any connection between the two incidents.
And investigators are still processing evidence. I'm told they've talked with several witnesses and are waiting for the results from the autopsy, which was done today. Reporting live, Corey Rangel, ABC 15 News.
We begin with new developments tonight in a mysterious case involving a Valley CEO. Thanks for choosing us. I'm Christopher Sine. Tonight, we've learned the Scottsdale businessman's son is dead days after his girlfriend died at his San Diego mansion. ABC 15's Brian Webb joins us live with the latest. And Brian, tonight, the family sent us a statement.
Right, the statement says in part that despite the heroic efforts of paramedics and hospital staff, Max was unable to recover from his injuries. They go on to write, his loving, kind, vibrant spirit will be forever in their hearts.
Police have plenty of questions to answer at this San Diego mansion. Why did a little boy and grown woman die here within days of each other?
There was a woman on the property who appeared to be dead.
The home is owned by Scottsdale multimillionaire Jonah Shacknai, CEO of Medisys Pharmaceuticals. We learned his son, 6-year-old Max, fell down the main staircase on Monday. He was pronounced dead over the weekend. Maxie, as he is known, was in the care of Shacknai's girlfriend, Rebecca Zahau, the day he fell. On Wednesday, she was found hanging from a second-floor balcony, arms and legs bound behind her. Her nude body could be seen in the backyard next to a long rope. Police haven't said if it was murder or suicide.
Did not appear to be bound together. I think you used the term hogtie. That did not appear to be the case.
54-year-old Jonah Shacknai runs a $700 million company that specializes in anti-aging products. The twice-divorced father of three earned a reported $6.4 million last year. He was not at the San Diego home at the time of Zahau's death. No arrests have been made and no suspects identified.
And back to the family statement, a private ceremony is being planned for Max's burial. They are asking for any donations to go to the Whispering Hope Ranch Foundation that helps children with special needs. That is the charity Jonah Shacknai is involved with. Live in the newsroom, I'm Brian Webb, ABC 15.
Now that compilation of clips I put together ran chronologically, so hopefully as the story unfolded it made sense for you. But in all of those clips, what we didn't hear is what Sheriff's Captain Tim Curran said at a joint news conference. Quote, "It's possible that after slowly removing all of her clothes in a mysteriously symbolic candlelit ritual, she slipped the rope over her own neck, then had an accomplice tie her wrist and feet before hurtling her bearskin self over the balcony rail." Mysteriously symbolic candlelit ritual on the scene? So yet again, my friends, Cryptogon.com, breaking down the story, providing all the updates, where basically it looks as though the kid allegedly fell down the steps while under the girlfriend's care. Then she gets bumped off. Could it be the family taking care of business on someone who hurt their little kid? This has all the ingredients of sinister forces. Medisys indeed. Our other murder and mayhem updates, heavily armed deputies and mounted police keep watch as infamous mother leaves jail and disappears somewhere. That is at least until the book is ready. U.S. heat wave blamed for 22 deaths, wide swath of the country in its grips. An enraged flyer pelts the LAX to Salt Lake City crew with peanuts after they made him put out his e-cigarette. Cash cab hits and kills a Vancouver, BC pedestrian. Three presumed dead in a Yosemite waterfall plunge. Naked couple in Tappan Zee Bridge suicide jump where some note former teacher Alpha Choice was in a cult. And our last note of murder and mayhem after all of those suicide copycat cluster events. Amish teen leads New York cops on a drunken buggy chase. And we ride that drunken buggy all the way back here to Oregon Oddities, where a story that I believe I had only perhaps tweeted out or referenced in the last few weeks, but I've now watched about half of the documentary, and it's called Hot Coffee, Unlikely Oregon Filmmaker Storms Sundance with a Documentary About Justice Denied.
An 81-year-old woman has been awarded $2.9 million after she sued McDonald's.
It wasn't like the McDonald's employee took the coffee, threw it on her.
Who brings these frivolous lawsuits?
All kinds of people. People that are jackpot justice oriented.
The media in corporate America did a masterful job. Mrs. Liebeck became a joke.
Businesses use a number of devices to keep the public out of the courts.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
I was burned so severely that they didn't think I would live.
Hey, you can show me the burns.
What?
Yes, if I saw injuries like that, I would definitely take a different view of it.
She was drugged. She was raped, gang raped. She had to have reconstructive surgery, sir.
Ms. Jones has had her day in court.
4 years to fight to get in court is not a day in court.
The Appeal was a book I published. It's completely fiction, and it's completely true. It's a story of the purchasing of a Supreme Court seat in Mississippi.
It's a good payoff. You put money in a judicial race, it can have literally $1 million impact on your company.
The U.S. Chamber mounted a very, very large and expensive campaign against me.
When you're pregnant with twins, it's really important to determine how many placentas. When I went in, it should have been immediately followed up with an ultrasound.
You just wanted to change what happened, knowing that it was preventable.
Sue, you have to go through a lot of trouble to do it. It affects your life. You're going to be attacked in all kinds of ways. Going to court to gain justice is heroic.
That's the trailer for Hot Coffee. Oregon filmmaker Susan Saladoff made the film. She took it to Sundance. HBO bought it, and that's where I grabbed it from. Unlikely Oregon filmmaker storms Sundance with a documentary about justice denied. And in that trailer, you hear the man on the street being interviewed. They're actually shown the photos of the woman who was burned by the hot coffee. And when you see the film and you see the graphic photos, you realize that there's more to this story than we knew. And that's what this documentary does an excellent job of painting out. Also, medical malpractice and, of course, the rape of soldiers by Halliburton and other private military contractors. All that and so much more is within the documentary Hot Coffee. Our other Oregon oddities, our Governor Kitzhaber uses campaign funds for home security system. That is from the Willamette Week and from Coin Local 6. Portland City Council votes 5-0 for the plastic bag ban. Ban everything! But speaking of raping war whores, most Americans want to slash defense spending, but it's barely part of the deficit discussion. USS George H.W. Bush enters the Persian Gulf. That would be CVN 77, G.H.W. Bush, supercarrier, enters the Persian Gulf as CIA veteran Robert Baer predicts September Israel-Iran war. That's from ZeroHedge.com. 15,000 U.S. troops to remain in Iraq, renamed diplomats. Two never-finished Navy ships cost U.S. taxpayers $300 million, and they are headed to the scrap heap. And our last war horror note, Walter Reed Army Hospital to close its doors. The days of ill-serving veterans who fought for a lie. They're just going to have to go somewhere else. Perhaps to a city street near you. Our final area on this 721 News Purge, Burn For It, Witch's Wand, brings us to West Virginia Worry with an unbelievable story. We take it from allgov.com, but a lot of supplemental reporting from, one, the Charleston Gazette, and also Mother Jones. You ready? Big coal lawyers blame inbreeding for problems caused by mountaintop removal. Following the release of a study linking a controversial coal mining technique to birth defects, industry lawyers responded by insinuating the health problem was just as likely caused by inbreeding among local residents. The study failed to account for consequenti sic, one of the most prominent sources of birth defects, the Crowell and Mooring remarked in a statement, which added the attorneys were happy to help any coal companies looking to counter unfounded claims of injury or disease from potential lawsuits prompted by the study. The term consanguinity is a relationship by blood often used to infer a kinship with a common ancestor. So essentially, lawyers used legalese and euphemistic language to imply that the damage being done to my home state of West Virginia is not being done by the multinational corporations who don't give a rat's ass about you.
But it's because you're inbred.
That's the kind of crap I try and fight against and dispel while I'm here on the West Coast. However, I'm not doing myself any favors with this follow-up headline from GodDiscussion.com. Hillbilly Bible School launches in West Virginia. As city from NewsandSentinel.com, settling police abuse lawsuit for $70,000. And from the West Virginia Metro News with something that again reminds us of idiocracy on NavigatingNetflix.com. Charleston attorney arrested on pimping charges. And we close out our West Virginia worry, and we close out this news purge, and we close out this massive, epic, supersized episode 226 with five stories from the Washington Times, different reviews of the current Contemporary American Theater Festival. Going on in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, my college town where I spent 10 years, went for the school, stayed for the town, music director at the college radio station, waited some tables, played some music, and I did some sound design for the theater department. And I also worked for a couple summers for the Contemporary American Theater Festival, which has become one of the world's, or rather the country's, premier new American play showcase. So we've got Race in America, David Mamet style, Lucy Thurber and the Insurgents invade West Virginia, Sam Shepard's punchy Ages of the Moon, We Are Here explores a trail of broken hearts, and From Prague, Without Love. So you can see right in there a world premiere from Sam Shepard, and that's not the first time he's world premiered plays at the Contemporary American Theater Festival. That, I suppose, is a nicer way to wrap up this episode with a brighter note of the arts related to where you're from, and ultimately that's what it's all about. That's what all of these things are really about. And I'm trying to learn just as much as you are. I always like to draw attention to my Twitter account, twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, which I'm increasingly having more and more fun on, and as we reported to you at the top of the show, I realized for a long time that Facebook was screwing with my feeds and messing with my posts. Twitter doesn't seem to do that yet. That's because they haven't been gobbled up by Microsoft or Apple or some such garbage yet, thankfully. We're nearing 1,000 followers on Twitter, and just a quick glance down the list of a lot of things that never really make it to the page, or at least sometimes not in the form that they are in our Twitter feed. 4 hours ago, Flotiligo asking the question, are there Israeli students spotted in Oslo? In the initial report 4 hours ago from USA Today, after the tip from our source in London from Sieve, Norwegian TV reports blast at Oslo government building. We've got links to old music on vinyl on YouTube, channels that show you the turntables spinning, playing classic music for you, which I love. Anti-Walmart flash mob turns up at a store demanding pensions and benefits for employees, or else. And today in history, the King David Hotel in Jerusalem bombed by the Irgun, a Zionist extremist organization resulting in 91 deaths in 1946. Recall the question we asked a few moments ago, are there Israeli students spotted in Oslo? So many other things going on. The last thing I will reference with hashtag phone hacking and the Murdoch scandal. One of my other favorite things that I've enjoyed for a long time on Twitter are the fake accounts. The accounts that are ostensibly someone. But you know it's done in a satirical way that it's usually not done in a fraudulent way. It's done in a satirical way, such as TEPCO CEO, which, of course, isn't the CEO of the Tokyo Electric Company, but doing satirical tweets about, oh, I'm going to meet with the head of GE, Jeffrey Immelt, Obama's buddy. I'll tell him how the reactors did if he tells me how to avoid paying taxes. Things like that. Someone set up a fake Twitter account for that cobra that that supposedly escaped from the Bronx Zoo. So there are a lot of fake Twitter accounts with either dead celebrities or fictional characters, and I've started one myself, but I'm not going to tell you what it is because I'm still kind of growing it and getting it going, but it's very timely related to the phone hacking meme and perhaps the downfall of Rupert Murdoch and News Corp. I believe that is everything, my friends, and yes, to our good friends in the chat room over on ZeroPointRadio.com. That has a lot of info to go through. This has been the massive, supersized episode 226 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 22nd, 2011, and my name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, brought to you, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, and all the other fantastic alternative media outlets that we are proud enough to be associated with or connected to. So as we think of all those things, as we discuss all those memes, as we try and dissect the news and be more informed that we don't go crazy, as we see things changing, your friends and your family and talking and openly sharing becomes that much more important. So as we always end these episodes, and as we say, one, now more than ever you need navigating Netflix to help prioritize your time for movies that feed your mind. In relation to the phone hacking scandal, my friends, as always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, the New World Next video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon, 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.